And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Metrospective. I'm Ted Berg, joined on the line by one of the Athletics Mets beat writers, Tim Britton. Tim, there is no baseball until Friday.
Yeah, we've got several days off. I understand why Major League Baseball does the schedule the way it does, but it does feel at a certain point like the LCS series or both LCSs. I'm not sure how grammatically to say that properly. Finished up in 4 and 5 games. Why don't we just start the World Series after one day off?
Right, and you know, you say like you said, there's logistic issues in play, and I think there's certainly that for. Like whoever's like printing up the World Series banner and all those things needs like the time to get that stuff done. But as a reporter facing those logistics, like I remember, I want to say it was 2014, winding up like when a series ended early, and then like and so now if you were covering either of those two series and it ended after 4 or 5 games, you're sort of just stuck where it's like I don't quite have enough time to merit going back to wherever I came from, maybe for a day. But then at the same time, like for me, it was like, now I'm stuck in Kansas City for 3 days, right? And I ended up eating a lot of barbecue, which went okay, but it still like sort of puts you in an odd spot.
I was going to say, there's got to be worse cities in America to be stuck in for 3 days than Kansas City.
I love Kansas City. Have you spent a lot of time in Kansas City?
You know, I haven't been there. It might be the major league city that it's been the longest since I've been to. Because, I didn't go when the Mets went in 2019. So I haven't gone since I was on the Red Sox beat, which was probably like 2015-ish or so was the last time I went there. But I really do like it. World War II Museum is a... World War I Museum is there, is excellent. The Negro League Museum is great. The Jazz Museum is really nice. Mm-hmm. I like have you ever been to Winstead's there?
No. What is Winstead's?
It's like a late night fast food drive through milkshake place, which is...
I have been to that. Yes, I know exactly where. Because there's only like 3 places to eat after midnight in Kansas City, and that's one of them.
It's Winstead's, it's Sonic, and it's something else.
Right. It's the Taco Bell right across the street from the stadium.
Right. I like Kansas. Mets go there next year, actually, in 2023. So maybe that will end my drought of not having gone to Kansas City.
Well, my barbecue spot after those 3 days of very intense research, I determined that it's LC's is the place to be for barbecue in Kansas City. Write that down now.
Okay.
Let's go to Kansas.
People don't have strong opinions on that.
It's a hole in the wall. It's like it's not. It doesn't have the like the pomp and circumstances of some of the other places, but the best food in at least in my again like a pretty extensive survey of Kansas City barbecue that week. This is as of 2014. I would say I was back in 2015. Let's talk about this World Series and how it pertains to the Mets, because something you pointed out, which I thought was an interesting. An interesting note when we talk about how to try to guess what's going to happen in a 3 or 5 or 7 game series is about how teams in the postseason tend to score more of their runs via the home run than during the regular season, which is interesting. I think there's probably, and we've discussed this before, probably something about that has to do with just facing better pitching. You're less likely to score runs, as the Mets did so often this year, by putting lots of guys on base and creating traffic and capitalizing on a single or whatever. The Astros bullpen. Have you looked at the home run rates of the Astros bullpen?
I haven't, but I assume they're good.
They're so good. The four guys they pitched in, I want to say game 4, which were Rafael Montero, familiar to Mets fans, Hector Neris, also familiar to Mets fans, Brian Abreu and Ryan Pressly, during this season combined, they allowed 12 homers in 242 and a third innings, which is a 0.4 rate of home runs per nine innings. Edwin Diaz was the only guy on the Mets staff who could match like the Astros' entire staff's home run rate. Seth Lugo and Ottavino combined to allow more home runs than basically the entire Astros bullpen. So it's just and it's interesting to me because they like again like the Mets like if you look at the stats they had a pretty good bullpen this season. It's not about that, but if you think about the personnel that the Astros found or developed or however you want to say they're coming to these guys, because that's another point of it. If you add Ryan Stanek, and Hunter Brown, who was up, who was a starter in the and sort of back and forth, they combined to allow two home runs in 75 innings. So the bullpen of the Astros, the postseason bullpen of I think everyone who pitched in the NLCS combined to allow only 14 homers in 317 and a third innings. Like, that's an astonishing rate. And that, to me, suggests, like, this is something they're trying hard to do.
Well, you know, Houston plays in that notoriously difficult ballpark to home running, right, where every right. fly ball to medium depth left field is gone. It is, you know, it's... I think we talk a lot about what the Astros, how they set themselves up for this run by tanking, right, in 2011 mm-hmm. through 2013. So much of what they are now, like I feel like they have very few of the remnants of that still.
That's
there. Like,
yeah.
it's like Alex Bregman is still there. He was a number two draft pick. Lance McCullers is still there. He's a guy that they used their excess bonus pool to draft mm-hmm. Later than he would have otherwise gone. But you know, you look at their starting rotation, you look at their bullpen, a lot of it is a victory in international signings. That's guys like Jose Urquidy and Luis Garcia and Christian Javier. Like, that they've got six good starting pitchers at a time when almost no one else has four.
And all the guys, like, of those guys they developed, none of those guys was like, oh, this guy's a can't-miss prospect. They were all fringe-type guys, and now they're all great.
Right, and then they've taken, you know, you look at the back end of their bullpen. Abreu is another international signing. I'll be honest, I did not know who he was until this postseason. I'm like, oh, this guy's really good. Ryan Pressly is a guy who was a Rule 5 pick off of the Red Sox by Minnesota and then had, you know, some okay years in Minnesota. The Astros traded for him and turned him into one of the game's better closers.
Right, right.
We know about Montero kind of in that same vein. So that, you know, it's when we talk about the Mets, you know, we've spent so much time talking about them being the East Coast Dodgers. You know, there's an element you also want to be the East Coast Astros to an extent. You want to do so, you know, you can take things from different organizations that they succeed and excel in. And one thing, you know, LA does this too, obviously, is taking players who didn't fit another team's role or didn't, you know, other teams did not maximize that guy's potential and getting the most out of them. And especially at a time when the Mets have to have no bullpen to speak of, basically. Like, the bullpen is the area where you can get creative. It's the area where you can find inexpensive talent and kind of mold it into something that is better than that.
They need the Astros software. Like, whatever they've uploaded into Rafael Montero, the Mets need to have.
Right. You know, like, the Mets, they could, this offseason, sign Rafael Montero to a two-year, $18 million contract or something like that.
But that's exactly the wrong way to go about it, right? That's exactly the wrong way to do it. Yeah.
Or they could try to unearth the next Rafael Montero, a guy who, you know, didn't quite make it as a starter, maybe, but has the skills to be really good as a reliever in the back end.
It's fascinating to me with the Astros because it's like I don't know what it's like the hammer paradigm, you know, like when they say like, oh, you buy a hammer and then you, after 10 years, you replace the handle. And then after another 10 years, you replace the head of the hammer. Is it still the same hammer? Like the Astros have had total turnover in their front office at this point, right? Jeff Luno was canned and exiled, and the Orioles hired half of the rest of their front office and scouting department. Other guys have been ousted in scandal, like the new manager Brent Strom, who was a huge part of their what they did pitching wise. He left last year. It feels like somehow they just set themselves up like organizationally so well and so comprehensively for this type of success that they could just keep turning these guys over and still field a good team every year.
Yeah, I did see on Yankees Twitter, I guess someone had pointed out that, you know, all the Yankees front office people have been there for so long, and all the Astros front office people have only just gotten there in 2020 or something. And maybe, you know, Yankees need to be ahead of the curve the way the Astros are. And it's like, well, you're missing a big reason why they rebuilt their front office in 2020. Yeah, it is, you know, I don't know the details of their, like, executive hierarchy well enough to know, like, who the common links are, the common denominators over that time. If it is just kind of, you know, Luno came in and set up this system with Sig Madahl and Mike Elias, guys who are now in Baltimore, and it's just been, like, they've been able to kind of run the machinery even without them there, run the software.
Yeah, but is it just a computer? Is it like Hal is the GM of the Houston Astros now? And like everybody, you really just need someone to read out what the computer says and be like, yep, it's our guy is, we want Hector Neris. You know, like it didn't fail. It couldn't crack the Phillies bullpen, but that guy's going to be lights out for us.
The Phillies let Hector Neris walk so they could sign Jay Reese Familia.
Right.
And they made the World Series anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. We should talk about that.
Yeah. And you know, you talk about maximizing players' potential, and it's not just unearthing the hidden gem. It's also giving $118 million to Zach Wheeler because you think he's better than a league average pitcher that his stats had shown. And that's what the Phillies did. You know, I remember at the time being fairly critical of the Mets in their decision not to extend Wheeler, not to really engage in extension talks with Wheeler on a serious level when he was willing to stay, not trading him at that trade deadline when you could have gotten more for him. One thing I did not criticize them for was not like beating the Phillies offer, not giving Zach Wheeler $120 million over 5 years. But he has lived up to that contract and more. Really, I mean, I know Mark Carrig has said on the Roundtable, one of the Athletics baseball shows, that, you know, name me a starting pitcher contract basically since Scherzer's with the Nationals that has worked out better than Zach Wheeler's in Philadelphia. To see him have, you know, he's carried that success into the postseason, that roster. I think there's a part of you as a Mets fan. Obviously, you don't like seeing the Phillies win if you're a Mets fan. And there's a double-edged sword because you're watching Wheeler as a big part of it. And you're watching JT Realmuto as a guy who, you know, the Mets could have gone after more aggressively a couple of years ago when they decided to sign James McCann instead. There are a couple of what ifs when you're watching that team play.
That's definitely true. Just to go back to the point we were making about Montero, one of the what ifs I never would have said was like when, and I don't remember a lot of controversy about the Mets having Brad Hand and letting him go. And yet Brad Hand winds up playing a fairly big role in the Phillies bullpen, did not do well in the NLCS. But that was a guy who would have been really useful for the Mets this year. And I don't think a lot of people were like, oh, Brad Hand is the mistake that's going to cost them in 2022.
What was it? I think it was Brandon Drury got a hit off Brad Hand and Anthony DiComo was like a real battle of former Mets. Right. And there were a bunch of people on Twitter like, when was Brad Hand on the Mets? Like, I remember Brandon Drury, but Brad Hand?
Right. Everybody remembers the Brandon Drury era.
We remember that stretch in July of 2021 when he had like 8 straight hits with 4 extra base hits.
Yeah. It's just, I guess, the Phillies, I think, get credit for partly for getting hot at the right time, which as we discuss, is like a thing that happens sometimes. I think you could probably also give them credit for being like for zagging a little bit when the rest of the league is zigging. Like it seems like there's almost always some value in that, and just being like to heck with everything. Let's just put Schwarber and Castellanos in the outfield. How bad could they be out there? And like it's pretty bad, but home runs are worth a lot.
I mean, it's remarkable considering that, like, you know, they signed both of those guys. And the idea was, like, you can't put either of them in the outfield.
Right.
Like, they're both designated hitters. And then Harper has the injury, so he has to DH. And now you've got to put both those guys out there. And, you know, they haven't, until they traded for Brandon Marsh in July, they didn't have an everyday center fielder either. So they, you know... they had a lot of things go wrong earlier in the year, not just during that what, 21 and 29 start, I think it was, 22 and 29, something like that. You know, and for them to get hot at the right time, it, you know, we talked about at the start of the postseason a little bit that, you know, your depth gets you through the regular season, but in the postseason, you kind of need your stars to show up. And I think, right, you know, this is, Dave Dombrowski has done that before with teams. You go back to like his Tigers teams were very top heavy. You know, the 20th guy on the roster was Phil Koch or something like that. You know, you had Miguel Cabrera leading that lineup. You had Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer in the rotation. You had a good shot when you got to October. And this team kind of reminds me a little bit of that because you've got Wheeler and Nola in the rotation. They're leaning on basically three relievers right now. Maybe a fourth if you count Robertson. And then the lineup, it's really like the top four or five guys in that lineup. I think it was game four of that series where it's like the top four guys hit like four or five home runs, drove in all 10 runs. You know, that's what's carrying them is their stars are playing like stars.
Right. And Zach Wheeler, I think just to go back to something you mentioned earlier, like as hard as it is to stomach the Phillies in the World Series, I don't think you're going to find a Mets fan anywhere with ill will towards Zach Wheeler.
I think you can find a Mets fan anywhere with ill will toward anyone who's ever played for the New York Mets.
Right. You could be like, what do you think about Jackie Robinson? There are some Mets fans out there who have ill, right? Are there any Roberto, like all the great legends of humanitarianism in baseball, there is a Mets fan who hates somewhere. But
there's someone somewhere who's like, you know, that Seaver got greedy in 77. I'm glad
we
traded.
Right. Of course. But by and large, like, I feel like Zach Wheeler, even as a guy who went and took a big contract for a division rival, like, everybody's like, well, yeah. Well, you know, I don't know. It feels like maybe the. Maybe I've just surrounded myself with more reasonable people as I like proceed through adulthood. But I think it was one of those deals where it was like everybody kind of wanted the Mets to bring Zach Wheeler back. Everybody saw the size of the deal, and at that point it was like, oh, that's that's going to prevent them from doing this and this and this and this. Good for Zach Wheeler for getting paid. And I think that same group of people can now say, like, good for Zach Wheeler for, you know, being all that he can be.
And look, Zach Wheeler being this kind of pitcher, that's getting other pitchers paid too. That's getting, yeah, you know, that's Zach Wheeler being this good is a reason Kevin Gausman signed the deal he signed last year. It's a reason Robbie Ray signed the deal he signed last year. It's a reason Carlos Rodon is going to sign the deal that he's going to sign this offseason. Guys who you knew have a lot of talent that hadn't put it together for a 5-year span, but had done it for a year or two, and that you can bank on them continuing that progress even after signing a deal in free agency. That Wheeler has kind of lifted up a lot of other pitchers in that same pool.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Let's talk about the Mets in free agency, which is something you are focused on now in your writing at The Athletic with Will Salmon. Starting with a very interesting free agent case because he is a singular player. Actually, the Mets, the both that you've written up so far are singular players on this offseason market. But there are not a lot of guys out there like Brandon Nimmo who filled a role that the Mets very much valued and needed. What do they have to do to bring him back, and will they?
Yeah, it's kind of remarkable. We've spent, I feel like, you know, I've only been on the beat since 2018, but so much of 2018 going into 19, 19 into 20, and 20 into 21 was how are the Mets going to find a two-way, everyday center fielder? Because let's be honest, like Nimmo did not look like that guy defensively in center field. Mm-hmm. You know, you go back to 2018 and Mickey Callaway saying, yeah, like all things considered, we want Conforto in right and Nimmo in left. And they, you know, they tried with various guys to find a center fielder. And it turns out the best one was just Brandon Nimmo playing 10 steps back from where he had been previously. Right. And now that they found that two-way center fielder, he hits free agency. And, you know, he's going to get a bigger deal than I think a lot of fans expect going in. Like he is almost certainly, I think, a nine-figure player. He's going to sign a $100 million contract. I wrote in the story that I did with Will that, you know, it's probably like 5 for $115 and maybe even 7 for $140, that kind of contract mm-hmm. for Brandon Nimmo. And so it's not an easy decision when you're talking about money that large for a player who's never made an all-star team. But when you look at kind of the contributions that he's made to the Mets, the way that he's, more than fulfilled his potential with New York. You know, like their offensive identity it's not just that he's a fit for their offensive identity. It's kind of like he's crafted it himself, and everyone mm-hmm. else has kind of followed suit. And Billy Epler talked in the postseason press conference after the postseason press conference. About kind of how he liked the Mets grinded out identity as an offense. And Nimmo is such a critical part of that. He's really, you know, he led them in pitches per plate appearance. He was in the top 20 in Major League Baseball in that stat. The Mets as a team were just league average. But Nimmo was kind of the forerunner at the forefront of doing that for them. And, you know, kind of even the bigger question, I think, is if he's, you know, you can find ways to replace him in the lineup. You can bump Jeff McNeil up to the top part of the lineup, maybe make Starling Marte a leadoff hitter. Like, you've got other options in the leadoff spot, but I don't know that you've got that many other options in center field. It really depends on how you feel about Marte as a center fielder, because if it's not Nimmo and it's not Marte, man, there's a steep drop-off.
Right. I mean, you know, like, I think that there's a case you can make where, like, oh, if you have, like, three plus corner guys, because Starling Marte is a very good corner outfielder, right? And so is Mark Canna. Like, if you say, like, oh, we have three really good corner outfielders and we'll slide one of them to center and we'll sort of cover ourselves there in terms of range. But, yeah, like, ideally you'd want a true center fielder out there and Nimmo... Quietly. I mean, I think that what you're saying is right about people are going to be surprised at how much money he makes. His skills are the quiet ones, right? Like, you don't see him... He makes a lot of really nice catches. You don't see him make, like, extraordinary catches that often. He hits for some power. He doesn't hit a lot of home runs, right? Like, and his best skill offensively is that he gets on base all the time, which is, you know, it's not the same as Pete Alonso.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I thought it was funny. I was talking to one player on the Mets about Nimmo a couple months ago by now, and they were talking about, you know, that they've always thought there's more power in there from him, and that...
For sure, because when he gets into one, he hits it real far. It's not, you know, it's not that he doesn't have the strength.
And when you look at it, you know, the 2019 season was the year everyone hit a bunch of home runs, right? That was kind of the mm-hmm. rabbit ball season, and that's the year Nimmo missed the most time. Like, he, you know, he had the neck injury that April where he was striking out all the time. Mm-hmm. And he came back in September and played pretty well. But this player was like, can you imagine if he had the whole summer to hit home run? Like, he could have hit 24, 25 home runs that year. And then that changes how you think about him as a power hitter. You know, he hit, what, 17 this year? So, like, he can, you know, he's a guy that he goes to a different ballpark. It wouldn't be a surprise to hit him hit, just to see him hit 20 or 25. And the other issue is just, like, the absence of good two-way center fielders in Major right. League Baseball. Like, you look at last year, it's Nimmo, it's Julio Rodriguez in Seattle, it's Brian Reynolds in Pittsburgh, you know, Cedric Mullins in Baltimore. Like, who else is, are you not sacrificing something offensively or defensively? You know, the Blue Jays are sacrificing some defense with George Springer. The Yankees are sacrificing some defense when they play Aaron Judge there. You know, Harrison Bader was a great two-way center fielder for 8 games in the playoffs. You know, like there's just so few of those guys that...
Michael Harris.
Michael Harris II in Atlanta. That's a good one. But there's so few of those guys out there that it's tough to lose one without a good plan, good backup plan for him.
Yeah, to go back to your point about 2019, Mark Canha is a very similar hitter to Nimmo. But I think, you know, if you ask me gut instinct, like who has more power, I might say Canha, and only because Canha had a full healthy season in 2019 and hit 26 home runs. So you're like, oh, he's like a guy who can hit 25 home runs, even if 2019 is like one giant asterisk.
Right. And it's funny. I was looking back at what I wrote last offseason about the Mets, and I had written about Canha, like really good all-around player, underrated from his time in Oakland. Don't see him as a fit because I think the Mets need to prioritize slugging over on-base percentage. And I feel like it'd be... I guess Canha's presence makes it a little easier to let Nimmo go. Like, you know, bringing Nimmo back, you're looking like, man, it's kind of the same offense unless you decide to do something different at DH or third base, which you probably won't because you got prospects to fill that spot.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the way they went about building the team last year has put them into this kind of uncomfortable box this year where if they, you know, even if they really wanted to upgrade at power, upgrade their power, it would mean moving on from Nimmo probably.
Right. I mean, Vogelbach is an upgrade, right? Like just having him there for the full season as against right-handers is a bit of an upgrade. You're right though. I mean, if you want power, there's a center fielder, at least in name, and Judge is a guy I think that if you have good corner outfielders, you can handle. You would put up with Aaron Judge in center field for his bat. Is there any chance they make a run?
There's a chance. I haven't followed the Judge side of thing. Like, you know, I've seen some reporting from like Andy Martino at SNY that the Yankees aren't really sure what Judge's intentions are. You know, I think if you're picking team, you probably take the Yankees over the field in terms of where he ends up. And if it's not the
Yankees... Well, it would be. I mean, the Yankees are, at least historically, have felt like a very sort of PR-conscious team. I was thinking that actually in terms of... Because I had been convinced that Carlos Beltran would be their next manager. But I think that losing the ALCS in 4 games to the Astros makes that an impossibility now, right? Like, there's just no way the Yankees would hire Carlos Beltran after losing to the Astros like that. And I feel like by the same token, like, they're just not going to let Aaron Judge, like, they're not going to say, oh, we have no interest in this guy who just had a historic season for us and came up with our club and we're just going to let him walk away. Like, if you're gonna pay more than the Yankees do, you're gonna pay a lot of money.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the circumstances of their season, not just Judge's ridiculous season, but the Yankees' season arc as a whole makes it kind of more and more imperative for them to re-sign him. And if it's not the Yankees, then I think the Giants are probably the team you look out for the most. So I would say the Mets are, you know, they might be third or fourth on that list with the Dodgers. I know Mark Feinstein of MLB.com was reporting that the Dodgers would have interest. The Dodgers' interest.
That's not to doubt. Mark's a good guy. I'm not doubting his reporting, but like I think that just about, you could always just say the Dodgers have interest.
Yeah, I think it's due diligence. They'll probably do the same kind of thing they did with Bryce Harper, which is offer him like an exorbitant amount of money on a short-term contract. And I would doubt Judge would want to do that, considering he just had the best walk year in Major League history. You know, there's a chance, but I would not bank on it. I think, you know, for the Mets to sign him, it would take, they would need to go to a place that you're not expecting any, you know, it's over $300 million by a comfortable margin probably at that point. And it's probably guaranteeing years that you don't really want to guarantee to a guy who's going to be 31 next year. I'm not saying they shouldn't do that. Like, I think that's a conversation they should
but
be
what
having.
What if I have $21 billion?
Right. Like, you know, do you want to go to above and beyond 8 years and $320 million or something?
I buy a second super yacht or should I sign Aaron Judge?
But, you know, the super yacht, Ted, you get so much use out of it.
You can. It feels like it's like a you. That's your mansion that floats. But Aaron Judge, it's a lot of home runs.
If you had a super yacht, how often do you think you would take it out? Like,
just for a spin. Like, I'm just going to go, like, fishing off the coast a little bit. I think that you, don't you live on a super yacht if you have one? I think they, like, that's because, like, the oligarchs, right? Like, that's how you escape international sanctions and such, is by you just, like, you, I'm on the sea.
You know, I read that whole, the New Yorker did a whole story on super yachts.
Yeah.
And I retained nothing of it.
Absolutely. I don't know. That's where I got my information as well, and I don't remember a word of it. I just know that they're out there.
Right. So if it's not Nimmo, if it's not Judge, if you don't think Marte is a center fielder, do you have a next guy on the list? How far down are we going before you feel?
Oh, yeah. I mean, no, I looked at your list and there were not a lot of compelling names on there, mostly because like most of them aren't guys. I think if you want someone who's going to be an offensive downgrade from Nimmo, you at least need him to be like an above average defensive center fielder. And like other than like unless you're going to try to like dance with Kevin Kiermaier next year, like I don't know where that's coming from.
Yeah, I mean like Kiermaier is the other center fielder on the market, and you know, great defensive player, would be an upgrade defensively over Nimmo, but offensively, you know, hasn't done a whole lot and has a longer track record of injuries than mm-hmm. even Nimmo. So you've got him. You know, Jake Mangum is a guy that we've heard about in the minor leagues, the SEC's all-time leader in hits. He's played 33 games at the AAA level. Not a guy with a huge draft stock. Was a senior sign the year they drafted Matt Allen. You know, good player, a player who's put himself on the major league radar with some swing changes that he's made in the minor leagues. I think it'd be awfully difficult at a time when you're coming off a 101 win season, you're in a win now mode, and you've got other prospects you're trying to work into your lineup in Alvarez, Beatty, and maybe Vientos to add Mangum to that list at a premium defensive spot.
What happened to Kirk Nieuwenhuis? I'm just curious.
He's still kicking. Why was he not at Old Timers Day?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, what? He had that 3-home run game one time, I believe. Don't quote me on that. We got a question from Nick, Nick.
Can I throw out one more idea for center field?
Is it about Kirk Nieuwenhuis?
It's not about Kirk Nieuwenhuis, but it's tangentially connected because his 3-home run game, obviously against the Arizona Diamondbacks. The Arizona Diamondbacks, a team that does have 4 good young outfielders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Corbin Carroll is a top
Dalton
prospect.
Dalton Varsho would be an amazing fit because it covers you for the, like, having a catcher be a DH thing, too.
Right. So you've got Dalton Varsho, who made the All-Star team last year and is a Gold Glove finalist. You've got Corbin Carroll, who just came up toward the end of the season, a highly touted prospect. I don't think Arizona's going to trade either of those guys. Sorry.
Yeah, but they have that guy, Jake McCarthy, was real good.
Jake McCarthy, who played some center field, had, you know, if you're looking for a guy who looks like, had kind of Brandon Nimmo's pre-breakout season, and McCarthy's kind of that, like his stats actually better this year than like Nimmo's 2017 in part-time action.
Yeah, he doesn't get on. I don't think historically he's gotten on base like that. Like if you look
He's a different kind of hitter,
right?
But one who's been productive. And then Alec Thomas, who's a top prospect and is a Gold Glove finalist in center field, and played a bunch this year. You don't know that he's going to hit. And probably would not hit in 2023 right off the bat. But, you know, those are two guys who could be available. And, you know, maybe the Mets look at their prospect pool and say, we've got a couple guys who don't quite fit our roster moving forward. And the Diamondbacks have a surplus in an area where we have need of guys about the same age. Maybe there's a match there.
Do you have any interest in James McCann? This is a question from Nick. I know Nick to be a reasonable man, so I don't want to. I just want to go into his questions. He says, like all Mets fans, I've been a huge fan of Jacob deGrom's for many years. He was must-see TV, even when the Mets were otherwise unwatchable. He was solid during that last start, and I honestly hope he finishes his career in Queens. That said, I sometimes question his dedication to the team. Is it me, or does he hit the showers and vanish after he's lifted from a start? I can't remember the last time I saw him late in the game when he just started chatting with Scherzer and Bassett. His absence was noticeable during the first half of the season. Yes, he was injured, but you never saw him in the dugout. He only made an appearance at City to long toss here and there. Was he allowed to rehab in Florida close to his family? If so, is that special treatment the rest of the team resents? Is it sacrilege to question Jacob deGrom's dedication? Physically, he's as talented as any pitcher we've ever seen, ever, and I do want that guy on the Mets, even as he approaches his mid to late 30s. But if the Mets are going to re-sign him, Nick wants to know if there's a chance that Jacob deGrom will just say, like, yes, I'll take the right amount of money, but I'm not going to bother with, like, making a whole big show of my free agency because I know this is a place where I can be quiet. And I've figured out how to succeed with the Mets without putting myself out there.
I don't question his commitment to the craft or his, even his commitment, like, his commitment to the franchise. You know, you put so much into he's put so much into becoming the pitcher that he is. You know, this was not he was not born with all of that talent just kind of fully realized at the start. There's been a lot of work that's gone into that, a lot of development that's gone into that, and a lot of people in the Mets organization who have helped him get there over time. So I don't really judge guys on who's in the dugout. Like, you know, most starting pitchers are not in the dugout after the inning in which they depart the game. Mm-hmm. That is kind of standard. Most guys are not around the team when they're out for an extended period of time. The way DeGrom was, that's kind of standard. You end up seeing those guys a lot in like Miami because they're rehabbing either at home in Florida or at the team's facility in Port St. Lucie. None of that raises an eyebrow to me.
DeGrom learned his changeup famously from Johan Santana rehabbing in Port St. Lucie. Like, you can decry him being at that facility instead of with the team, but it's probably better for doing your rehab, for one thing. And for the other thing, there is some chance that there is now some 22-year-old pitcher who just learned Jacob DeGrom's slider.
That would... find out Jacob deGrom was actually, like, he was running the Mets pitching lab in Port St. Lucie.
It's not the worst idea. It's not the worst idea.
You know, there are people who have in the sport who have brought up, you know, maybe deGrom could pitch through some of those injuries, especially the ones he had in 2021. That he was, you know, that perhaps he had grown so accustomed to this ridiculous standard he was setting and an ERA under one for much of that season, that he was a bit leery of pitching through pain, knowing that, you know, he was going to give up a couple runs probably, but he could get through it. And, you know, that's every pitcher goes about that process differently. Yeah. I remember covering Clay Buchholz in Boston, who was a guy who, like, didn't want to pitch if he felt anything less than 95%. And then, you know, started doing that. Was like, hey, like, I realize it's okay.
And got to the point where you can do that. I feel like you can never really, like, when injuries are in play, that's your career. If Jacob deGrom feels like he can't go, you just have to understand that he can't go.
Right. And you know, Scherzer has talked about that a ton in terms of how he's learned his body. And I talked to him before spring training, and he pointed to a time where he was at the University of Missouri where he thought he could pitch through something, and he came, like, perilously close to requiring Tommy John surgery the year he was going to get drafted, which would have obviously changed a lot about how much money he made early in his career in signing bonus, where he would have gotten drafted and all that. He said he was lucky that someone basically stopped him from pitching when he thought he could. So everyone has different thresholds there. That's the only thing that I've heard brought up really about DeGrom's quote unquote commitment to anything. So it's possible that he would prefer to play somewhere that is not New York. If that is the case, hopefully the Mets find that out relatively soon and the Mets pivot to something else, or they say, hey, how much do we need to buy you out of that preference?
Right. We can build you a tower in the sky where you never have to see New York. Yeah.
You know, we'll have Elon Musk come in and build a boring tunnel just for you to Citi Field.
That would be so cool. I mean, not the Elon Musk part, but, like, if there was, like, a special Jacob deGrom transport, like, or, like, a people mover, like one that was through the sky so you could see him, right? Like, just, like a mile-long tramway that only Jacob deGrom can ride. And so, like, you just know, like, oh, there he goes. He's going to his start, and he's in a uniform and everything. I like that idea.
Instead of facial recognition or a fingerprint, to get in, you have to throw 102-mile-an-hour fastball.
Yeah, and they just put a quarter on a plate, and it's like, and if you can hit that quarter at over 100, you can ride the tram.
It's a really interesting free agency for him. I think we've got our free agency outlook series. We'll get to DeGrom later in the week with how much I think he might make And I think they're, you know, it reminds me a little bit of, you know, the, you look at his numbers are similar to what Scherzer had going in free agency last year. Obviously not off as good a season, but it reminds me a little bit of, you know, even Pedro Martinez's free agency back in 2005. And will there be a team that wants to go like an extra year for him? That's kind of one of the dynamics in play.
Well, there will be plenty of time to discuss that on future episodes. We will be back at some point during the World Series, I assume. If you've got a question, feel free to hit us up on Twitter. I'm at OG Ted Berg. Tim is at Tim Britton. Or you can email askTedBerg@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. And Tim, peace out.
Adios.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.